You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, we're live, pal. What's up, everyone? Welcome to another Monday edition of the A-Side Live Chat here on MMAfighting.com. I am, of course, your host, Jose Youngs. I know we're still trying to do this three times a week during quarantine time, so thank you for joining us on this fantastic Monday. Joining me is my Monday co-host, Alex Kaylee, up north in the great country of Canada. And joining us, we were talking about this before we started, making history, first fellow Canadian to join Alex, Elias Theodore. So before we get into the questions, Elias, how's life been in quarantine times for you amid this pandemic up there?
It's been good. You know, just doing my part to blunt the curve in more ways than one. Staying home, chilling out, and, giving the six-foot rule.
And Alex, it's been a week since last fans saw you, heard of you. How's life been up there amongst your fellow Canadians? Are you all staying 6 feet apart up there? Doing a better job than us down here stateside?
Well, most people who know me know I was social distancing before all the stuff even happened. Somewhat against my will. I would ask people if they wanted to hang out.
And just like that,
the words end, they didn't have that. I now know what they meant. Yeah.
And Casey, our favorite mustachioed hipster soy boy, cutie boy director. I don't know what else people have called you in our comment sections throughout the time. How's life been with you in the great state of California, whom I might say is handling this pandemic better than most other, actually probably better than every, the other 49 states stateside?
I had a friend come over and we had like the social distancing thing in the front yard type of thing. You know, we talk, mm-hmm. Apart. And then we kind of like looked at each other and there was a moment, like, even though we haven't seen each other in a while, where we realized there's nothing really to say to each other because like nothing happens. We're like unless it's bad news, like there's no good news to share. It's like, are you not sick? I mean, are you sick? Not sick? Do you have a job? That's about all you can really talk about. So there were some protests down the street, but in Huntington Beach, which is, you know, about 30 minutes away from here.
Right.
So that was pretty stupid. So, not sick, still have a job, and people are stupid. That's my weekend.
Sounds like everyone's weekend. But of course, this is not our podcast. This is all of yours podcast. You can leave your questions in the comment section on Twitter. You can DM me, whatever, because I know a lot of you guys like to. Also, before we get into the questions, I get a lot of DMs. I posted a tweet about me being sad and something I would do if Habib and Tony Ferguson fell off for a fifth time. I haven't forgotten. I just don't want to go out to the store amid this pandemic. So, yes, I will. For those of you who are in the know, you know, and I will get that video done eventually. But for now, waiting for this to boil over a little bit. But without further ado, it's Monday, guys. I'm sorry. Casey, do you have any questions for Mr. Theodoro?
Oh, of course, of course. You know what? Let's start off with here. A silly question.
From Zombie Prophet on Twitter. Okay. What are your top 20 MMA moments in the month of April? That's a lot of moments to happen in the month of April.
A lot.
I can't picture what has happened in April. I know John Jones fought Ovin St. Preux in April. That's the first thing that comes to my mind, but that's clearly not a top 20 thing. That means Demetrius Johns beat Henry Cejudo in April at some point. So either you guys have a top 20 moment in the month of April in MMA history.
Yeah, or a lot of even like personal MMA related moments around this time. I think that would probably be more productive in answering this question. Does the month of April hold any significance to you? Especially, well, I mean, I guess today, and then anything MMA related.
Well, yeah, 420 obviously being a religious holiday of sorts. But I think the 20 times Khabib and Tony have been canceled and put on and off. It's just kind of going on that. And then Justin Gaethje kind of coming to save the day. And then just kidding, that's not going to happen. And we're going to put that on, Fight Island and everything in between. Just the chaos of the chaos of all this COVID situation and what it's done to society in general. And obviously MMA being a part of our society and our, what's it called, you know, walks of life and whatnot. So just the yo-yo that has happened in April. It's been crazy.
Well, here you go. April 16th, 2016, Tony Ferguson was supposed to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov for the second time. So there you go. Right on brand for this yeah. pandemic of what we could have had. I got a notification this weekend. I was supposed to be in Brooklyn. So this pandemic is, you know, go ahead, Alex.
I'm an idiot. So when I read this question, I assumed he meant this month of April specifically, and I assumed it was just like a trollish question. And I was like, 20 MMA moments in any normal situation would be a lot to name, much less this month where we had not. So I'm an idiot. But I do want to relate it back to Elias. Like, what kind of stuff have you, you know, missed out on this month that you normally do training wise? And like, again, obviously wanting to watch those fights as a fan, you know, a lot of us wanted to see, you know, this UFC 249 card that didn't happen. So, yeah, for yourself, training wise, kind of what are you missing out on? And other than Ferguson and Khabib or Ferguson Gaethje, like what kind of other big fights are you kind of sad that we didn't get?
Yeah. Well, obviously training in general and, you know, the aspect of it being my life, my job, and going every single day. Instead, what I've been doing to kind of pass the time is just running an ungodly amount of kilometers. I'll use the metric system because it's much more efficient.
Thank you.
see what happens when there's another Canadian who can back each other up on the, you know, sanity and metric systems. But point being, like I think this month that we've been in quarantine or whatever, I've run roughly about 320 kilometers, give or take. And then, you know, shadow boxing in between. I got some, you know, equipment to kind of lift and do some work, home workouts and whatnot. I was actually planning to fight in April. Obviously, obtaining my therapeutic use exemption, there was a plan to fight in 420 because in the month of April on 2020, 420 is all month long. So I was going to validate my therapeutic use exemption. That unfortunately didn't happen. But you know, staying ready, staying in shape, and once this all clears, because you know it is eventually, we're all eventually going to get on the other side of this. It just you know, hopefully sooner rather than later. I'm staying, you know, in shape and ready to kick ass when I can.
You last fought in December. That was your first post UFC fight. It was a win. You got yourself, I think it was a finish for a second round, I think.
Third round.
Yeah. So can you tell us if you were going to fight for that promotion again? I know it was a promotion in Windsor, Ontario for you Americans. can you tell us, were you going to fight for that promotion again? Or can you say where your next bout was going to be?
It wasn't set, but there were a bunch of promotions out in BC, again, to validate the therapeutic use exemption that I received out in BC. So there are local promotions there. But at the same time, because of the way the whole system works in regards to the commissions, now that I got a therapeutic use exemption in one jurisdiction, most, if not all, should validate my exemption because of just the way it all works out. The case in point would be if someone got suspended for, you know, steroid use and they were suspended for a year in, let's say, New York, California wouldn't California wouldn't allow them to get registered until their suspension is over. Well, the same thing happens in positive rulings, and that's the case in regards to my therapeutic use exemption. There's already preliminary conversations with other commissions that, again, once I get a fight booked in that area, they'll most likely validate my therapeutic use exemption. So, again, this is a way for, obviously, it was a lot of hard work, and it was able to come to because of me arguing my fundamental Canadian right to Medicaid as prescribed by my doctor in BC. But now, because of that ruling, I'm able to take that precedent and run with it, not only in BC, but everywhere else I fight.
Now, can you take that precedent if you ever get booked to fight in the States again? I mean, or is that just going to be
that's how they all work. That's how they all work, right? Wow. It's called the same thing. If you get suspended in BC, if you get suspended in New York, something like California or someone like Colorado, they most likely, again, they ask when you're applying for a license to compete there, have you ever been suspended? Well, if they have a therapeutic use exemption in that jurisdiction, then it almost actually puts them to say, it almost puts them on the spot to say why that other jurisdiction was wrong. That's how it actually ends. So ironically enough, as a free agent, this fighter here can still be an agent of change.
Now, you said you wanted to fight on 420, if I heard that correctly. Did it matter what organization you fought, or just the fact that you wanted to fight on this specific day, and which of those promotions would be the most willing to book you a fight on this day?
There are a couple of promotions that we were already pretty serious talks with. It was just basically finding the date and the right opponent. Obviously, I'm one of the best in the world, and I want to keep competing that way. So it's just kind of putting that together. Obviously, a lot of people, I find myself in a weird place at the point where either prospects or other veterans, they don't necessarily want to fight because they want to put themselves in a position to get to the main stage in any capacity. So, the fight that I had in Windsor, it was roughly about 10 opponents that we eventually went through, but I was able to fight a former UFC veteran as well, and do it in dominating fashion. And a real fun fact to kind of have to kind of explain in that. Obviously, it was my first finish in quite some time. The other aspect being the Ontario Commission doesn't have cannabis as a Schedule I drug or a prohibited substance, so they didn't test for that. So in reality, that was the first fight I was able to medicate as prescribed by my doctor. And obviously the results show for themselves. Competing at the highest level, at the way I was, because of the strict testing, in many ways I was competing at a disadvantage compared to other athletes that can medicate as prescribed by their doctors. So now with the TUE and other avenues to compete at a competitive playing field, I'm excited to keep that win streak going and smash the next person that stands in front of me.
Elias, specifically, what can you say? Finally be able to properly medicate. How did that, specifically, how did that benefit you in that last fight?
Yeah, well, I have bilateral neuropathy, so nerve damage of my upper extremities, right? Mm-hmm. So when that question that we were kind of talking beforehand, being able to medicate with your hands, is because my actual hands are where the issues are. And a lot of my fighting style over the last couple of years was actually taking that account and moving around it. So now being able to medicate and not having those flare-ups that I normally have, because again, putting your body through not only training and the condition that I already have, but also the weight cut itself it inhibits my ability to compete at a level playing field. But now at this point, I'm excited to be a complete fighter and keep smashing the way I did last time and the way I usually done.
Sorry, Jose, I just want to add a little bit of trivia. That last fight you had in December, that was in Windsor. I think the last time you fought there was the last time Bellator was there.
Yes.
I think Bellator was 64. I was that crowd as a fan, sitting with the family of the people of the fighter that Elias was beating up. So they were not happy. No. They were not happy with how you Rich Liktawa was the guy's name, and they were not happy with you beating him up. But no, now you returned
fought, to he almost fought, another sorry to interrupt you there, but he almost fought my brother in the stand, like their family and friends.
Oh,
they almost picked a fight with my brother, and my brother's ginormous, so it was pretty hilarious. Because they were basically the longer the fight went, the further, as you remember, I kind of just put him against the wall and just beat him senselessly, and what's it called? They were basically kind of cheering him on, and my brother was cheering on as well. And then they kind of got in his face, and then my brother stood up, and he was towering over them, and they kind of, just walked away afterwards. But that was the weirdest fight that I had, and one reason, because I was the swing bout, and it was pretty much all decision wins up until that. And obviously, with Ben Askren competing in that one as well, it was the championship bout on that one was a 5-rounder. So I actually fought after Ben Askren at 12:30 at night.
Yeah, you were the real main event.
Yes, yeah. MANE, trademark included.
Casey, I believe we had a question about Elias and medicated hands, right?
Oh, yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Let me pull that one up.
because we were talking about this before Elias hopped on, and we did not understand it. So, Elias, I'll ask you to explain this like I'm 5 years old, and I have no idea what's going on. From Sean Denny, at Denny Rands, longtime commenter, Elias's three UFC defeats came against opponents that are very durable. If he could have medicated his hands properly, does he think that extra damage he could have caused would sway those fights in his way? So you were explaining a little bit of medicating hands in the upper body. So I have I have no knowledge of this situation, what that means. I read this and I go, medicate hands. What does that even mean? And of course, you can answer this question as well.
Yeah. So obviously, having bilateral neuropathy, it's nerve damage of my upper extremities, which essentially means radiating heat, nerve damage, flares, cramps, and anything in between that are a constant, condition that I suffer through both as a patient and athlete. Medical cannabis allows me to calm my nerves and actually medicate and deal with the actual pain management side. That's what cannabis does. So instead of the alternative, which would be opioids, painkillers, or any other type of really debilitating prescription drug, I am now able to compete using my own medicine, just like anyone else could use any type of prescription drug. So this is less about cannabis and more about medical quality. And that's what the opportunity being able to do so in a Canadian jurisdiction under my fundamental right to medicate as prescribed by my doctor allows me to do. And then again, being an agent of change, I can now bring this to America and help out American athletes as well. But going back to it, I would never I fought some really tough guys and I've won more than I've lost many times over. And the ones that I lost, I wouldn't chalk it up to anything in regards to inability to medicate. Obviously, each individual fight, it's each individual situation, right? So I would never use an excuse. The better man won, I would say. But again, the only people that I've ever lost to are top 10 in the world at the time. And you know, one of those persons happened to be Thiago Santos. Even in that situation, I was able to take everything he threw at me and never quit. So one of the things I was able to learn from it is that, again, even as a professional fighter, fight or flight is kind of still ingrained in it. And, you know, even when push comes to shove, I can still fight under the worst situations and in the bloodiest of wars. And that's what it was. I had the hugest cut on my forehead, what's called bruised black and blue. Again, not saying too graphic out of it. After the fight, I was peeing blood for a couple of hours. Like that's how intense it was. Right. But again, if you can survive that, and that was my first loss. So kind of realizing that, you know, whether you win or lose, the sun rises another day and you get to live to fight another battle. So, you know, that's what that was able to show me. And obviously, with his career, the way it's gone, it actually that loss in many ways is one of my favorite and best fights, regardless of the outcome.
Casey, you got a question? You're just popping in.
What is it like the first time you piss blood from getting beaten up? Like, does that scare the
crap?
Keep
in mind, Casey does train, and he's talked about having amateur fights before. So you see this big smile on his face right now. Like, I think he's genuinely curious when he asks it. So what is it like the first time you face an opponent and then start peeing blood?
Was it from body shots? Like, what is causing that? Because I hear my fighters saying that. Like, what actually is it? You know?
Well, it's not only the fight, right? It's also depending on the weight cut. It's also the stress you put your body through 24 hours over. Because like the real fight in reality is actually the weight cut, and it's the process of the camp kind of leading up to it. So it was one of my tougher camps, and I was able to get through it. And even with him pulling away in the latter rounds, the way he did, again, there was no quit in me. To the question itself, peeing blood. Luckily, it was the first and only time that's ever happened. So it definitely catches you off surprise by surprise because you're like, wait, that's not what that's supposed to look like. But was able to, lick my wounds and come back and, have many other fights thereafter. So, I would say that obviously it for the most part, a surprise, a little nervous, but I was able to enjoy the rest of Vegas the next day.
Going back to your cannabis and talk you were speaking of, how many fighters have approached you since you came out as, like you said, like you are allowed to self-medicate and so on and so forth? Have any UFC or non-UFC fighters approached you for more information? Like maybe they hear like their hands hurt all the time, and maybe they weren't aware that this was something that they could deal with using self-medication. So how many fighters have approached you, if any?
Yeah, not only fighters, because again, this has implications in athletics beyond. So there's different avenues where this, again, just kind of going back to my own specific situation, the therapeutic use exemption that I got in British Columbia, because the athletic commission is on the infrastructure of boxing, it also has implication for boxers as well. So my case sets precedent for amateur and professional boxers and MMA fighters. And then beyond MMA and boxing, other athletes, Olympic athletes who are tested year round have approached me and asked me, one, about the process, two, about how they should go about kind of working around the drug testing system that they have in regards to, you know, fear of what consequences would happen if they were to medicate as prescribed by their doctor, or again, in places that don't have medicine and you know, prescribed in the way it is, because obviously access isn't a universal thing at this point. And that's the case even in Canada, as we have legalization, it still means there is a prohibition for you know, first line workers, certain union workers, first responders, and other people that are in unions that, again, unfortunately still look at cannabis as a Schedule I drug.
I was going to ask, like, in here stateside, we have like the three major sports, and they're slowly coming around to it. I think the NFL, their last bargaining agreement, is loosening the rules on on the use of medical marijuana and such. And I know a lot of NBA players are called specific, like most prominently Kevin Durant has called for it, of the Brooklyn Nets. So when you see these major sports still not fully embracing it, but loosening, is that a major win in that, in your world, or in that, in the self-medicated world?
Oh, for sure. Again, it's a step in the right direction, for others being on the cannabis side of history. That's where the world's going. It's just taking longer in certain areas than others. The key distinction in my case versus others, I think they are removing cannabis, where this is the first example of cannabis being actually recognized as a medicine. So that's where the key difference is. And again, the implications of what it could have in the Olympics and beyond.
Ask question, get an answer. Well, thanks so much. thanks so much, Denny Rantz. Like, again, didn't know what that question meant. I feel Elias was clearly the person to ask. Yes. From Instagram, why don't they just postpone Khabib Tony instead of giving Tony a different fight? Don't know who asked this question, so can't give a shout out. But Elias, I don't know. I'm sure you followed the news. For the fifth time, Khabib and Tony fell apart. Supposedly, they are going to book Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje in May. Now, we joked months ago that imagine a world where Tony Ferguson would have to fight Justin Gaethje to get another shot. Khabib Nurmagomedov, like, basically going through a murderer's row, maybe one of the greatest runs in lightweight history, and he's not even the undisputed champion. So should they have just waited till this pandemic clears up? I know Alex K. Lee wrote a long piece with our own Mike Chiappetta on the site, but your opinion, should they have just waited, or should they have booked Tony versus Gaethje?
Well, I think there are many different factors in this, right? Like, obviously they have a schedule, and they have certain requirements that they have to meet in regards to ESPN and other financial components and contractual components. In addition, because of religious reasons, Khabib, he's pretty much out till, you know, September anyways. So there are a bunch of different factors in that. Obviously, it's an exciting fight. I just feel for Tony because, you know, like you said, he has to go through a murderer's row. And even if he does beat Justin Gaethje, I'm pretty sure he's already the interim champ, but how'd that work out? Right. So, it's just one of those things where, you know, it is the way it is, unfortunately, but Tony's a savage and it seems that he doesn't care who they put in front of him. He's ready to smash him.
Yeah. Like the argument I made on the site, I was was arguing in favor of them doing the booking that they did and not waiting for Habib and Ferguson again was that that old saying, you know, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, right? I think that's how the UFC has to look at it, is this is a fight that they feel like they can make now and is very likely to happen. But Elias, from your perspective, let's say, again, you were in kind of a Tony Ferguson situation where you had this rival or you had this big money fight on the table and then had to wait. And then they said, oh, you know, for whatever reason, injury, again, personal, religious, you know, reasons, you won't be able to fight this guy for 6 months. Would you rather, again, and similar situation to Tony Ferguson, wait for that opponent? Or if they say, hey, we got another top three guy, still good money for this fight, do you want this one instead?
I would imagine just fight as soon as possible. He was out for quite some time because of an injury. He's, again, had his own roadblocks along the way. So I would imagine he's just game to fight anyone and everyone that's in his way.
And but specifically for yourself, though, you also, yeah, again, you agree with that mentality.
Yeah, for sure.
And I would imagine, and I don't know the financial situation, but I would imagine they gave Tony a decent payout to take that fight. In the interactions I've had with Dana White, I would imagine he wants to kick in the door of this fight island, supposedly. And I know he's promised a big thing. And Tony Habib would be the biggest fight they could put together right now. If one of them can't fight, just book the interim fight. And I imagine both guys would got a sizable payout to headline. And have you seen the proposed card, Elias, that Dana White wants to put together? Has three title fights and everything, and they would put an interim title fight over the two undisputed titles, including one that has Dominic Cruz and one that has the greatest female fighter of all time defending her featherweight championship. I would imagine the two fighters in the interim title fight got a decent payout. So I imagine that would probably, like you said, Tony Ferguson's been out a while, don't know his situation financially. Maybe he just wanted to fight to get some money before this pandemic maybe hit harder. Also, I was reading, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and he's also 36 or 37. Yeah, yeah. Like, how long can he literally wait?
Yeah.
Well, I think if he wins the championship, he would be the oldest lightweight champion in UFC history, which is crazy.
And the first ever interim champ.
There you go. Well, to put the last time Tony Ferguson lost was pre-Ronda Rousey UFC. That's how long he's been winning. So, and now he has to fight Justin Gaethje to fight Habib Nurmagomedov. If he beats both of them, I still think the winner of Tony Ferguson, Habib, would be the greatest lightweight ever. But if Tony plows through both of them, he's like a top five fighter ever in my mind.
Ever.
But
yeah.
Ever.
Especially going over all those adversity, right? Like, think how many hiccups he's had 100%. Along the way.
He's had 12-month layoffs after 12-month layoffs and has come back to fight like Donald Cerrone, world-class record holder, Anthony Pettis, former champ, Justin Gaethje, former champ. Like, you're not wrong there. But, Casey, any more questions? We have a million questions.
Sorry, guys. Before we get to that one, can I follow up and sort of talk about while we're talking about compensation, Elias? I don't know if you saw the story today. It was kind of late breaking about the PFL, the Professional Fighters League. They're suspending their season, and then their CEO has said they're going to pay fighters a monthly stipend actually during this time because they're not going to have. They're just postponing it a whole year, so there will be no 2020. No 2020 PFL season. You got to wait for 2021. I think they said spring 2021. But again, they said they're going to try to find some sort of monthly stipend. Did you ever think that was something when you were with this UFC that they could have realistically done? And again, not even just for situations like this, but just for times when you don't have fights booked, there's a 3 month gap, 6 month gap. Did you ever think that they should have had some sort of monthly stipend as is being proposed here?
Well, again, that just shows why they're kind of on the front line and the front end of a lot of this, you know, progressive change that they've kind of been doing. I don't know, you know, shoulda or coulda are two different things, I guess. Again, I think obviously all fighters in many ways are the ones that are at the front line of all the fights and whatnot. But I don't know, it's just the way it was and the way it is. So again, going back to could and should are two different things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair answer.
Ready for next question?
Next question. Beep, bop, boop from... YouTube comment. YouTube. From Chiatrit Oja. Apologies if I mispronounce your name. No one that asks questions on YouTube ever has a easy name to pronounce. Question. If USC proceeds with their two-venue plan, Apex/Florida for U.S. fights, and then in quotes, Fight Island for international fights, where do you think Latin America fighters would rather go? Interesting question. I can't speak for all of them personally. So I'll ask Elias, where would you rather fight, the Apex / Florida or on quote unquote Fight Island?
I'm going to throw a curveball here. Fight boat. Fight boat.
Fight, oh. Not
international
fight
waters.
Not fight volcano. Not on the moon. Anything is up. Anything is a possibility here in 2020.
Yeah, international waters, baby.
There you go.
Why? Why the boat, Elias? Why?
Because I'm a huge Simpsons fan and reminds me of what the
That is the right answer. I was hoping you were going to say that. That's
the correct answer. I can't remember the monkey's name, but when Mr. Burns is like, he's lost a lot of skin. You're going to have to donate a lot of your skin.
I'm so glad. Also, our first Simpsons reference here on the A side. So make
that can't be right.
Hopefully not the last.
My knowledge, I was the first fighter to bring up the Simpsons. So with my Disney Plus subscription, I have been plowing through them with it in the background. So 10 out of 10 guess right now, Elias. Alex, where would you rather fight? Fight Island or on a boat? I know you're not a fighter, but
my mother is from Peru. I don't think that qualifies me as Latinx. But it's kind of a strange question. I mean, obviously, Fight Island, man. I was just rewatching Mortal Kombat on Saturday, which, by the way, is a fine movie and probably still the best video game movie. It's that or friggin' Sonic the Hedgehog. I don't know. It's not a lot of competition, but
Street Fighter's pretty fun too.
Well, that's the one I've watched the most. So I don't know if that's the best. It's definitely the one I've watched the most. But yeah, I think the Fight Island thing, I know there's so many jokes about what it's going to be like. And I hope, we heard they're copywriting it, right? So it sounds like the UFC is leaning into this Fight Island idea, right? Maybe it's a fan-created thing, but the marketing is starting to kick in. I do hope they lean into to the mysticism of it a little bit. I know the UFC is fairly uniform. Like when they go to places, it's something we always complain about in the media, you know, whichever city they go to, whichever the country they go to, if you're just watching the broadcast, you don't know where they are. You know, there's no real local color except when they go to an outside the arena shot or something. So I think for Fight Island, it would be cool if just get a little cheesy with it. Get some of those cool ornate decorations. You don't got to be expensive, right? But I mean, Elias, is that the kind of environment you'd like to fight in? What's the kind of the most unique venue that you have competed in before?
Well, that would be really cool. I think it kind of goes to the throwback of like Bodog, right? If we all remember
of course.
Yeah, exactly. So like that kind of reminds me of the island kind of ambiance or whatever. It'd be so cool. I think the strangest or funnest place I ever fought was I fought in Ohio. The NAFFS, and it was under like this outdoor indoor tent, and like they had like 18 fights on that night, and like I can't remember how many of them were amateur. And like just seeing that the amateurs fight for like there was like 15 amateur fights and then like seven pro fights or something like that. And that was the first time I met Stipe Miocic. Wow. Also Jessica I as well. She was doing some color commentary or whatever and whatnot. But it was a hometown guy that I fought, and I just picked him up and threw him and like just kept on picking up and tossing him until his like clavicle broke. And then he just didn't get up. Yeah. And they just didn't get up for the third round. And it was pretty intense.
Casey, you've been covering MMA for years.
Wait, like, hold on. You're just going to walk. He just said, like, I just picked up a man, kept throwing on him until he broke his clavicle. It's like, we're so desensitized to what this is.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I just picked it through him. And it's like, Ohio. Yeah, hey, there's Stipe. Duh. Are you dead yet?
Just a guy. Oh, and then the guy that was fighting in the the main event, because I was the co-main. The guy that was fighting in the main event, the guy the guy that lost, his like face was like he needed like 40 stitches at the bare minimum, right? And he was just like hanging. It was just like hanging off, and like. The doctor, like whatever makeshift, like ringside doctor they had, like didn't really do much of a job other than like kind of like putting it back on with some tape and a little bit of disinfectant. And there was like the official after party of AANFS or whatever. and we were all going to the club or whatever or bar. And the guy that lost is like, again, his face is like just hanging off. And he's like, yeah, man, we're going to go to the after party. I'm really pumped. I'm like, shouldn't you go to the doctor? He's like, oh man, I'm going to wait for like 3 hours. I might as well just go party. I'm like, you shouldn't be drinking if you're going to get stitches because, you know, it's a blood thinner, but okay, whatever. I'm not a doctor.
So Casey, would you rather have 40 stitches what was it, broken clavicle or pissing blood after your first fight?
I'll go for the pissing blood. I'll just
walk that off.
Yeah, that's just like just a private moment. Like, oh, okay, yeah. Clavicle stitches. I don't know. Yeah, I've heard like horror stories about the backstage doctor stitching fighters up, and like, because it's not like a pretty scene. It's just sometimes they know what they're doing. Other times it's just like a staple gun.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think yeah.
Well, you got that when you got that big cut on your forehead, if I remember correctly, yeah. Right? Was that the Santos fight? Yeah. How many did you get from that, if any?
Like 35?
Jesus.
35.
30?
Jesus. They do a good job?
Oh, yeah. They did a great job. I shout out to the doctor. I can't remember him off the top of my head, but a great UFC doctor that they have there. What was I going to say? I think collectively I have over 100 stitches on my face between that fight, other fight, training, a couple headbutts. But ironically, they keep on becoming more like symmetrical. Like I'll get a cut here and like the exact same cut on the other side. And then there'll be a cut here and then the exact same one on the other side. It's really hilarious.
Oh, that's a good thing, I guess. Jose, I want to ask you.
It's as good as it can get.
Jose, I want to ask you. Would you rather have, a broken clavicle and piss blood and 40 stitches on your forehead, or see Khabib and Ferguson canceled for a sixth time?
The fight's never going to happen.
Never.
I'm on record saying that. I've said that every single time this like, it's never going to happen. Like, 14 times the charm. So, I have a better chance of getting a broken clavicle, pissing blood, and 40 stitches at the same time than Khabib and Tony do actually fighting. So I'll take that one.
At this point.
I've never had any stitches, and I've never broken my clavicle, and I've never pissed blood. So it'd be the first time for all three of those, especially if they happened all at the same time.
Exactly. That'd be the worst.
Just get them all the worst out of the way.
What a lovely episode we have today.
As Casey keeps
here we go. Question.
Oh. From Max El Cucuy Holloway, and his profile seems to be an amalgamation of Max Holloway and Tony Ferguson. do you guys think if Gaethje beats Tony, Connor would fight Tony after? This seems to be – there's this four-way dance in the top of the lightweight division between Tony, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor supposedly – wanted to fight the winner. Like Dana White wanted him to fight Khabib if Khabib won. Justin Gaethje thinks if he beats Tony, he fights Khabib and Connor will fight Tony. So Elias, what situation is going to happen here depending on who wins between Justin Gaethje and Tony Ferguson?
Well, I would assume that the winner will fight Khabib, right? Like he's the actual
interim title.
Exactly. It's the interim title just around when the time bracket is in regards to September. Return from the beat. So that would make sense. Who knows in regards to what Connor's doing. I think obviously they're being as strategic as possible in regards to what his next steps is, for obvious reasons. He's the biggest draw, even years out, and just coming back off the win with Donald Cerrone. So I don't know. That's, I guess, beyond my pay grade at this point, where who knows what's going to actually happen. If Fight Island's going to happen, if this May 9th fight's going to happen, there's a lot of things kind of still working its way out.
Elias, you're too nice. Do not be afraid to attack our viewers or readers if they ask a silly question. Would Connor fight Tony coming off a loss? Like so this is Tony loses his losing streak, loses to Gaethje. His win streak, I'm sorry, his long win streak, and then loses to Gaethje, and then Connor decides to fight. Why would Connor do that?
Yeah.
Ferguson's an insanely dangerous fight. Winner, exactly. I don't care if this guy's 36 or 46. I don't think anyone would ever want to fight this guy. And then after kind of losing a little bit of luster I will say I don't want to speak for Elias. I will say what I am thinking. I don't speak for any of you. I'll say what I'm thinking. That's a terrible question. That's a terrible question, Max El Cucuy Ferguson, or whatever your name is. I'm sorry. He has another one, which I don't know if we're doing, which is better. But I'm just saying, that question was – I'm sorry.
Angered a Canadian. Congratulations.
Maybe, very hard to do.
Maybe. I did apologize, though. I am sorry.
Exactly. true Canadian fashion.
All right.
Hey, Alex, what's the last letter of the alphabet, Alex?
Z. The mighty Z.
Mm-hmm. and it's a metric system. That is
what a weird most efficient.
This
live the metric system is pretty awesome.
I'll give you credit. The metric system is great. Can't get on board with Zed, and I don't like how you spell neighborhood or organization or any of these things with like the OU or S or whatever. Not
color.
Color. Yeah. What's
you watch coffee. Sports Centre?
Yeah. The theater.
Poppycock, I say. I will give you the metric system though.
Okay.
Do we have this guy's other question?
Hey.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, spoilers. I am not running the show.
Ooh, Max El Kikui Holloway. What does Elias prefer, sativa, indica, or hybrid?
It really depends on what I'm trying to do, right? So each, for the most part, it'd be a hybrid of sort because indica in many ways helps with the pain management. Sativa helps with energy. I do tend to do more indica at night, helping with sleep, whereas sativa would be during the day to continue, my day-to-day activities.
And Alex, what do you prefer?
Look, I know I'm the, Elias, I don't know if you heard about this. I am known as the bad boy of MMA fighting, really the MMA world in general, but definitely specifically our site. But despite that, I actually do not indulge in what good people like me call the devil's lettuce. Okay,
yeah, I'm a jazz cabbage.
I live my life straight edge, and while I approve of this holiday, this for the 420, I approve of I had a roommate.
420.
Yes, I love. Yes, I had a roommate who loved indulging in smoking the weeds, as we say, and I have no problem with that. But I will just say I do not indulge. I probably should. I think a lot of people say I need it, and maybe I will someday. But yeah, I'm sorry. I cannot answer this question. But I'm glad we have, an educated person on to talk about it.
Casey, you want to weigh in?
Oh, no, I'll pretty much, repeat everything Elias said.
Agreed.
Indica, when, nighttime, you want to kind of chill, sativa, get your day going. Yeah, pretty much. And hybrids, but it's more of a personal preference, kind of where you want.
Sure.
And then,
No, you can go.
Oh, yeah. And, you know what's awesome? Sativa espresso beans in the morning.
Nice.
Whoa.
The edible game is like so, compared to 3, maybe 4 years ago, it used to be just a crapshoot. Like someone handed you a brownie at a party and you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And now you're like, oh, I hope I'm not busy for the next 3 days. Shit. But now everything's different. It's really neat now.
Have we scared you enough, Alex?
No. Actually, I wanted to ask Elias, what is this sounds such a I don't know anything about spoken question. What is kind of the hot way or the opposite, kind of a way of taking the marijuana these days that maybe other people haven't picked up on it yet? That's, what do you think is kind of the next big way of what's the word? I'm like, guys, help me. I don't smoke. No, I don't know anything.
I think Casey was right. There's the edibles. Eventually the mixture of what do you call it? Into beer and other type of already established products. And I think CBD is kind of going to be in everything if it isn't already, right? CBD this, CBD that. Again, once the normalization of itself as a product, like one of the interesting things is for this.
I was going to ask about that right there.
Yeah, so I'm a part investor in brand ambassador for hemp energy drink. It's the first to market energy drink in Canada. It's a completely legal certified and approved, but it also can be taken to the States because hemp is considered just as a normal crop now because of the new measures and new legislation that has been passed in the United States. And as normalization of parts of the plant happen, more inventions and more adaptation of the plant will be harnessed. So very interesting. And for me, even though, again, one of the things I kind of been doing for the last little bit, blunt the curve, instead of what's it called? What's the real term? I've said it so many times.
Blunting the curve.
Yeah. Blunting the curve. I don't necessarily smoke blunts, for the most part. I vaporize like a professional. So we got it's the Mighty.
Look at that monster.
Yeah, it's the best there is out there. I have pretty much everything from Storz & Bickel. Anyone actually, this is a kind of little contest shout out that I'll say. I'm giving away a brand new Volcano Hybrid to anyone that shows me how they're blunting the curve. I'm going to pick someone this 420 California time, Pacific time. So you guys can hop on my social media at Elias Theodore to enter. Just got to show me a picture or a video of how you're blunting the curve, and I'm going to pick someone. It's like a $699 value, the vaporizer that I'm going to give away. So again, I vape like a professional, and so can you.
So you're going to have people send videos in on how they're blunting the curve?
Yeah, they've been doing it. I've kind of announced the contest on Friday, and it's really hilarious. People just
do we have some early front runners for ridiculous videos?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. What's it called? What was it? One of my favorite ones right now is a guy with a PPE mask, doing a bong hit, and then almost like a what's it called? The what are they called? Like the inflatable, not inflatable, the plastic? No, not plastic. What's the term? Almost like the wraps, like the noodles. There you go. That's the noodles for swimming. Closing it from one side to the other side of his room to get out of get the smoke out of his room.
Gosh, you guys are so
Casey
creative.
Casey is learning about piss and blood, using pool noodles to get the smoke out. This is a very educating. This is an educating episode.
I thought it was just the noodles. You just use the toilet paper roll and you stuff a air freshener in there, the dryer sheet.
By the way, guys, we were talking about all this gore before and pissing blood. I forgot. I really, really need to ask Elias. You were at the Phoenix – you were at that Invicta Phoenix Series 3, right? The last Invicta event, I think. Yeah. I know you're at the Lands. You also did Ring Boy duties for the show. Were you a Ring Boy during the main event with Stolyarenko and Verzosa, that absolute bloodbath?
I know. Casey and I watched this, and that is one of the – we both agreed was one of, like, the low-key, like – people need to watch that fight.
Yes.
Like, people weren't 100% talking about that fight.
Did you almost slip? I mean, what was it like being that close to that?
Well,
I mean, you've been in the fights before, but that fight was.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, it's called, the way that, Invicta does it, it's on the outside. So you don't actually go in the actual physical cage. So there was no blood that I would have been tripped on. But although there's always potential hazards, with the cameramen, and other, corners and stuff like that, you kind of got to maneuver around. But, no, it's crazy. Because again, with being a ring card holder, I get the best seat in the house, right? And to be that close, like literally front row, I had blood pretty much like coming to the vicinity because of how much blood there was that night. It was crazy. It's one of the most intense fights. Like I put it up there with like Shogun and Dan Henderson in regards to the back and forth that they kind of did. Like they were just literally standing elbowing each other in the face and in the head all like repeatedly, and neither of them buckled. It was crazy.
Is it different again? Because again, you've been in fights, so I mean that's a whole other different kind of intensity. But is it different actually being only kind of being able to witness it, like not having that adrenaline of actually being in the competition and just watching it? Was that different, weird for you?
Yes and no, because again, I've done so many ring card events with Invicta. Like I know all these fighters. Like I know all the female fighters that are competing there. And some of them I cheer, and some of them I've gotten to see the highest of highs and the lowest of lows that they've all had. So it was crazy to and again throwing the additional component of the tournament that was kind of a part of it, and the fact that it was the first time they were doing open scoring as well. So there was a lot of moving parts. It was a crazy night. And again, best seats in the house. And I couldn't be more thankful of being a part of the Invicta team.
Yeah.
Was that also the card they did the open scoring?
Yeah.
Yep.
What did you think of that?
Well, I think it was a nice, easy way to ease into it because the way the tournament was, they only had one round, then two rounds, a final round. So it wasn't necessarily that involved. But, and throwing the fact that the ones that they did win and the way it was scored, it was obvious that that person won and that person didn't. So there wasn't any controversy or any situation where it's like, this is why we have it. But again, it just shows another way why and how Invicta is on the forefront of MMA.
Would you want to know the scores in your fight between rounds?
Yes and no. I think, again, the two a couple of the losses that I've had, because again, they were either split decision or close decision. It definitely would have helped to know going into the third if I was up or down on the scorecard.
Would that change? Like, the argument against it would be like, if someone's up 2-0 and they know they're up 2-0, they could just coast the third round. Is that like, Casey hates that, argument.
They could kind of coast already if you already know. Yeah. If you already know,
exactly.
For the most part. And again, it's just, it kind of just puts the onus on the official to to do the right scoring, or else they're going to get some booze.
Right.
It's not an argument.
It's not an argument.
Those are just words. Okay, we got here's something we got.
Oh, there's photos. A picture of the fight of that Elias
doesn't even do justice. Oh, yeah.
It does not do justice.
That was crazy. I wasn't at home. I can't imagine what it was like there.
They were jumping into each other. Like, look at that. Like, ugh. They were doing that throughout the whole fight. And they're just standing toe to toe and literally jumping and elbowing each other in the face and stuff like that. It was crazy.
And that was the night after was Joanna and Wiley Zhang, right? That weekend, the two best fights that whole week were female fights.
Yeah.
Amazing. I would say the biggest bummer about that Invicta fight was like, it was such an incredible fight and just violent everything. And then unfortunately the next night, two other women had slightly, even almost an equally as good fight. It kind of like, it just kind of got forgotten. It kind of, it was just unfortunate, but I keep saying go to Fight Pass. Yeah. People have all the time in the world. Go to Fight Pass, watch that fight, throw it on the TV, you know, bring the family around. You know, just watch the most
watch a bloody fist fight.
Yeah, bloody fist fight.
Julia Stolyarenko.
Get your cool noodles out. Watch a fight.
Yeah. All right. Let's get this disgusting image. All right. We got some good questions. Here we go. Oh, from El Kukui again. Oops.
He's back.
Two people dead or alive Elias would love to smoke with.
Ooh. Bob Marley. And JFK.
Wow. Did not expect that second one. Why specifically JFK? I understand Bob Marley, but why JFK?
He actually did smoke for his back. Not many people know how bad his back was. He was in horrible shape. Again, being able to, or you know what, I'll do a little bit modern. What do you call Obama? Obama would be dope as hell.
Yeah, that'd be a fun time.
He's going presidential. Look at that. Yeah, Bob Marley and two presidents.
Former Chicago resident.
So,
Obama.
What for the Canadians, what prime minister would you want to smoke with?
Ooh. What's his name? Trudeau's father. He was Trudeau's father. What's it called? He was a cool dude. He used to party, him and his wife used to party with like the Rolling Stones and stuff like that. They were hippies.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like I said, look, I don't smoke myself, but I like hanging around people who smoke. And it's always a good time. So yeah, no, I was going to say absolutely Trudeau's father, of course.
Contact guy.
Yeah.
But friends like Alex, you want those guys around because you have those friends, like you go out and you're like, oh, he's going to drive. We're good. Yep. You're the cool DD. Yeah.
Lifetime Disney driver, buddy. Yeah. Anytime.
All right.
Excellent question. Triple threat from Max El Kukui Holloway. From Frank Furter. You guys ever smoke weed out of an apple?
No, I have not.
Yes, why would they? What is that? Why would they? What does that come from?
You can basically put a hole in it. You can make anything into a bong. You're just basically turning an apple into a bong.
Yeah. Didn't you see that? There was a, I think it was an embedded or something or a countdown where Luke Rockhold was showing off like his ceramic work from high school. And they had and in his ceramic class, he said the teacher would look at art. And if you saw that there was a contest between them to see who could make the most creative bong and not have it look like one. And if the teacher saw it and goes, this is a bong, he would just smash it in front of them. So the contest was who could get him to look at it and not realize what it actually was. And Rockhold won. He has like some crazy statue of like a bunch of heads stacked on top of each other with like the back and hollowed out and everything. So yes, Alex, you can make anything into a bong.
Well, I learned that from that movie Half Baked. The Stephen Baldwin is playing the MacGyver smoker, and he's like, I can't even remember what he asked for. Like these three random items. He's like, I made more with less, bro. I made a bong with less, bro. Yeah, I remember that.
Potato. If you don't have anything, you don't have any papers. You don't have, but you have weed. An apple is okay. Potatoes are better. Because the way they cut, apples are cool because you can kind of eat the apple afterward, I guess, a little bit. Just sounds like a fun thing. But the apples they're a little too wet, and so it's not the best. Potatoes way to go though.
Good to know.
I had this image for some reason of it actually like rolled up like thing and then stuck into like as a holder, like using an apple. I don't know what's going
You're
on.
You're very strange, Alex.
What does your apple pipe look like, Alex? Wait,
the one who doesn't indulge here, I am coming off as the most incoherent and lost somehow. So, yeah, let's move on.
No, I just want you to talk about it more.
Apples for all.
All right. It's like you put like a very small hole and you just, you know, it's like a holder. It's like a holder, and then you can like nibble on the apple and then smoke it. I mean, is that something people do? Maybe it is.
It's 2020.
Right, you froze. It's 2020. Alex.
You're frozen, Alex. We can hear you, but we can't. You're not moving.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, there you go. Hey, you got any more questions?
Oh yeah, yeah, we got some more. Hold on. Oh
yeah. Sorry, guys.
Roberto Lopez says potatoes are more difficult.
I disagree, but
maybe worth it in the end. Hard work pays off.
West Coast Cali. Apples are for poor. Apple is for poor people, or you have nothing else. Okay.
That's not a question.
It's more common.
We have against poor people and apples, sir.
Exactly.
Brian Kelleher, former co-host of this show, member of Crystal Crew. I'm putting crystals in my bong. So, yes, Elias, I'll ask you this. Thoughts on the crystals? Are you a fan of crystals?
Every once in a while. Again, if you have a little keep kind of left over and whatnot, I'll sprinkle it in. Again, another trademark that I own is Weed Bay, so I definitely sprinkle it in on everything.
There you go. How about the crystals? Like we had Jared Cannonier on this show, and he's very big into the healing crystals. He carries around pyrite anywhere because it wards off negative energy.
That was intense. Well, to each their own. Placebos work for that reason, right?
There you go.
All right, yes, but you know what actually works is the medicinal marijuana that Elias is using. That actually works, guys. All right, I'm not on the Friday editions, you know, the Crystal Crew editions of, or I guess on Wednesdays, who owns PT. Okay. I don't approve of this, with respect to Jared Cannonier and other fighters, like you said, Elias, who, you know, placebos works fine. I don't indulge in this junk science. Okay. I totally approve of all this weed smoking. Okay. But this junk science, I don't encourage it.
Well, I'm going to tell the story again. All of our listeners know this story well, and this goes with Brian Kelleher, Elias. I know Alex is getting frustrated already. We have a fan, Jessica, who mailed me and PT, the other co-host of the show, a bag of crystals with breaking down what each one does. Brian Kelleher asked for one of the crystals after his official weigh-in. We gave it to him. It was Tiger's Eye, and what Tiger's Eye does is you get monetary success. Like that's what it's supposed to amplify. That's what it's supposed to lead to. 2 hours later, he gets bumped up to the main card of a Conor McGregor fight and wins the performance bonus just mere hours after giving him Tiger's Eye. So I'm not saying it was the crystal, but it was 100% the crystal.
Placebos work.
Placebos work. That's a good way of putting it.
All right, let's some rapid fire. What we got? Pew, pew. Did I ask this one yet?
Fight Island from Trumbo. What should be the first main? We pretty much had that one. You think Fight Island hosts pay-per-view events or ESPN and Fight Pass card? So, Elias, should they do a annual Fight Island fight card?
Well, I would assume once they like make it a thing, it might become a thing thereafter. So, you know, they'll will it to existence, or the fans did. I don't know at this point. It's kind of like a who, what came first, right? Like the UFC.
I just want to like, I want to know where it is geographically before we can even put these parts together.
True. Like there's all the conspiracies where it's like, again, with WME's clientele, some of them have own islands like Eddie Murphy and what's his face? What's the guy that came out recently with Conor McGregor? Robinson. What's
Tony Robinson.
Tony Robinson.
Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins. Yeah.
Tony Robbins. He owns an island as well, and he's on WME as well. So there's a couple people like that where it's like, well, that'd be pretty cool. Like, imagine if it was like Tony Robbins. Robbins Fight Island, UFC Tony Robbins Fight Island. That'd be pretty interesting. And he's just making all the fighters, instead of like walking down, you have to walk on those burning coals. Yeah, exactly. Burning coals. It's like, yeah.
Elias, you got your ear to street. You got your ear to the street. I'm sure. May 9th. Do you think? What do you think? Do you think that's going to happen?
I honestly, I don't know. There's so many different things kind of coming into play. It depends on where it ends up being. Like obviously. Somehow WWE's essential service. So that anything else can happen, right?
Jeez, yeah. It's true. True enough.
Let me see it.
From at Dizzle Dan Oob on Twitter, what is something that will you do 20 times in April?
Medicaid.
There you go. Let me see that thing again. I thought that looks like that's like the size of a phone.
Yeah, it's called the Mighty.
Oh,
for a reason.
Let's talk about that. Wait, what is that? So, how does it work?
It's dual chamber here. So this is where the heating thing is. You can see the timer's going up, and then that's where it also attaches to your phone, so you can have different routines in regards to what you're gonna vaporize and how you're gonna put it all together. It goes in there. It goes in there. Like you would put a capsule like this. You put a capsule like this in there, and it's an actual perfect dose. So that's like, again, looking at it as a medicine, it's a medical device. Where's it? Right here. You put your cannabis in there. You pop it in here. Once it's ready, press here. Boom. There it is.
Damn. How much is that? How much does that run for?
Like this one's about $400.
That's the most advanced one.
That's the portable one. One second. I'll show you.
Oh my. Look at this.
I'm learning so much today, guys.
Yeah, for those of you just listening, Elias is going to grab what appears to be a spaceship. Volcano?
So this is the volcano hybrid that I'm giving away. So again, there's the display that's here. There's a plastic bag, and there's also a hose here. One second.
Casey, for those of you just listening, Casey's eyes are, I've never seen him more interested in anything in my life.
On top here. So the purpose of this one, it's called the Volcano, for obvious reasons. what do you call it? This is the one that I'm giving away. It retails for $699 US. So again, Storks and Bickel is the best medical device and the most popular one in the world. So I'm really excited to be partnered with them, both as a patient and also giving it away to all my fans, followers, and everything alike. So again, go at Elias Theodoro if you want to enter and win. You can still enter today, and I'll be giving away one of these bad boys.
Do you have to order those, or can you just go somewhere and buy it over the counter?
Both. Most dispensaries would have one for the most part.
So if the new version of that comes out, do people line up for it, like an Apple iPhone?
For the most part. But you can order it online and it'll come. They're a German company, but they also have different distribution channels in the US and Canada as well.
Hmm. Casey, level up your game, guys.
When you walked back with it, Casey was like, whoa.
The volcano, I bought my first volcano probably about maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, they've been around for, again, that long, and they've been evolving all the way through.
Yeah, the big crinkly bag, you know.
Yeah. So basically edited, or for lack of a better word, kind of upgraded the crinkly bag. So it's now even like 3 times bigger.
Well, Casey, we're out of questions, right?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah.
So, well, thank you so much for joining us on this special day, Elias, as you said, this religious holiday. Of course, you are the guest of honor. So you've already plugged your contest. You can say it. You can give people more information on it if you would like. But the floor is yours to talk about anything you want, plug anything you want, say anything you want before we sign off.
Well, first and foremost, thanks for having me. I'd love to come back again before the next 420. We'll talk my next fight once I got that kind of going on and once normalcy has returned. Mm-hmm. And again, go to @EliasTheodore if you want to follow my journey as both an athlete and medical cannabis advocate, but also still to enter to win one of these bad boys, the Volcano Hybrid by Sturks and Bickel. And thank you for your time.
We will absolutely love to have you on. I know Alex has learned so much.
Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power. So, but of course, I am Jose. That is the bad boy, Alex K. Lee. I don't know where Casey is on my screen, but everyone's favorite mustachioed hipster soy boy wearing his banana shirt. But for Jose, that's Elias. That's Alex. That's Casey. This will be on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everything. But we'll see you on Wednesday. We're out.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.